not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I paid a price, and I'll keep paying.
That was Not Ready with the Dixie Chicks. And this is Truth Quest with Melody and KHEN 106.9 Salida. And tonight, with my co-host, Eric Carlstrom, we've got Eric Shine. And he's a graduate of the United States Merchant Marine Academy at Kings Point. He'd been on the program earlier in this fall, and we've invited him back, and he's an expert in the history of the United States Merchant Marine, as well as issues relating to shipping issues and national security. And as his role as a whistleblower, Lieutenant Shine has taken his United States Merchant Marine oath, acto non verba, or deeds not words, to new heights. Lieutenant Shine has been the subject on hundreds of articles and has appeared on numerous telephone and radio programs nationwide, including shows on Air America, Voice of America, and Pacifica Radio. Are you here there? Are you there, Eric?
I am.
Oh, okay, let me see if I can get
the... It's acto non verba.
I knew you'd get me on it again.
That's the motto for the Academy. It's not a... really an oath to swear to, but are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
excuse me, sorry. No, we swear an oath of allegiance to the Constitution and to the people of the United States, and like any other naval or military or federal officer, we don't have an oath of allegiance to an individual. We have more of an oath of allegiance to an ideal or a way of life, which would equate to the rule of law, vice the what we're living under now, the rule of certain men and what some would term to be a military dictatorship right now. And that's one of the things that I could talk about right now is the I'll take that liberty if I might.
Okay, let me do one thing before you get further. Let me just say the disclaimer that the opinions expressed by the host and guests on this show do not necessarily represent the views of KHIN, its staff, or board of directors. Okay, Eric.
Oh, thanks. The wind out of my sails. No pun intended. If you think about it, since 2003 and the creation of the Department of Homeland Security in February 14th of 2003, I believe, or thereabouts, the Coast Guard moved into from the Department of Transportation, where it was a civil service or intended to be a civil service, into the Department of Homeland Security. And it's now and since then has been declaring itself to be retroactively a special branch of the military. They have equated uniforms and guns to being a branch of military, even though I think most people would look at our police department, and some may feel differently when you take a closer look. But the police are supposed to be just that. They're civil service, you know, civil law enforcement for civilians. They are not a branch of military. And although the most police forces have been militarizing extremely so in the last 10, 15, 20 years, they are still not a branch of military. But the Coast Guard, that was created more from the Revenue Cutter Service or Revenue Marine, which is part of the Treasury Department, 10 ships were commissioned by Alexander Hamilton shortly after our Declaration of Independence and right around the forming of our Constitution and more, to literally protect our borders and charge tariffs for incoming cargo and incoming foreign flag vessels. And the majority of our federal government was run off of these tariffs, paid for our federal government, our central government, up until the early 1900s. And it went from, I think, still in 1930, it was about 75%. And then it went down to about, into the 50s and 60s, down to about 50%. And then now it's, you know, anybody could take the stab at the number, but it's probably around 10%, if that, of our federal government that's actually being run off of any kind of tariffs from trade or anything else coming into the United States. But also the Coast Guard was started as the U.S. life-saving service, and most of these branched off of the Merchant Marine. We didn't even have a Navy here in the United States until our first Navy was actual commercial vessels that were turned into privateers under letters of marque, and that's what, you know, formed our initial United States Navy. And even the Coast Guard, all of its roots come from the United States Merchant Marine as well. And we had a Merchant Marine before we had a country. And what's happened, though, is the Coast Guard has armed itself. They're putting in close weapon systems, Phalanx double-barrel Gatling guns that fire 3,500 rounds per minute of depleted uranium on board their cutters. They're forming, or calling these the National Security Cutters, the first two in this class that's taking the Coast Guard out into the world to become the Coast Guard for the world, and not just, you know, where the U.S. taxpayers are paying for it, but to a large extent to privatize it. The very first two vessels in this international class of interceptors are named the Berthof and the Vosch, two good German names, which I think most people should find pretty interesting with the level of fascism or corporatism going on here in our country. The Coast Guard, though, is also, and more importantly, carrying on military tribunals under the Military Commissions Act. They're not specifically using the law, but they're using the language within the law, except it's not targeted at terrorists or members of Al-Qaeda. It's targeted at American citizens here on American soil, here, you know, in the United States, civilian mariners and others who are coming in. And even though I went to Kings Point, which is a sister academy, the Coast Guard Academy, the Coast Guard has me in these proceedings and has had me in these proceedings for the last 5 years and has worked aggressively to strip me of everything and anything, even though from within these proceedings I'm still supposed to be receiving my pay, medical benefits, legal aid, and more. And they're using these proceedings to impoverish me, strip me of my pay, my legal aid, medical benefits, all these different programs that I am to be afforded as a federal maritime officer. And they're doing this not just to me, but a lot of other people. And the Coast Guard has gotten so far out of touch with its roots, which was life-saving of American seamen, and it actually branched off the Merchant Marine, to where now the guns and the activities of the Coast Guard have been turned against not only American flag seamen and federal maritime officers, but even foreign flag.
Could you explain, Eric, a little bit more about what this five-year proceeding you're dealing with, what precipitated this protracted confrontation you're having with Coast Guard?
Well, it really doesn't. I'll get into it. I'll cover it, but it really doesn't matter, and that's one thing I want people to be real clear on. Not to, you know, be dismissive of your question. It's an important question. It goes to whistleblowing and more. But the key thing is regardless of what they say I've done, regardless of what they say I haven't done, regardless, you know, there's even case law that goes up to the Supreme Court where the military has tried to grab hold of civilian spouses of, you know, service members who killed their husband, like, a woman who had killed her husband overseas in England. And the Supreme Court, upon rehearing, and this is the first time ever upon rehearing that they actually overturned their initial opinion, they let her go. And it was because they said, you know, the military is never supposed to be in charge of the civilians, and the civilians are always supposed to be in charge of the military. And that's how our system of governance and, you know, defense has been set up. And what they're doing is, A, I'm not in the Coast Guard. I'm in a separate and distinct, you know, service. I'm a naval officer, so I'm actually a bar above. In a time of war, our service and coming out of Kings Point, my naval commission gets activated, and we come under the Department of Navy to protect commerce, trade, transportation, and our American flag commercial vessels. We had actually more people lost in World War II in our service than any other. And the Coast Guard is also supposed to move under the Department of Navy in a time of war. But because we don't have a declared war, we have where the Congress has given authorization to use force, which is different than a declared war. We are in this position where the Coast Guard has moved into Homeland Security. They're declaring themselves to be a branch of military, and now they're declaring not only can they police civilian affairs, meaning to arrest and detain and pass over to some kind of a judicial system, normally the civil, you know, our civil court system, but that they can actually prosecute and adjudicate within military tribunals civilians for civilian fines, civilian law enforcement, civilian penalties, licensing, and more, which they are strictly forbidden from doing in so many different fashions. But what they brought charges against me for, I had filed civil complaints in Article 3. A lot of people don't. I always get hit up for this because a lot of people don't understand. Article 1 is our legislature. It's Congress. It's the body that actually, you know, writes our laws on behalf of the people as our representatives. And then Article 2 is the executive branch or the administration or the, you know, the branch that is to administer the laws. And Article 3 is the judiciary that's supposed to come in and clean it all up. Any kind of disputes, grievances, you know, make sure things are constitutional or and remain to be constitutional. And what's happening is the this has been going on for quite some time, and it kind of goes into like even the DMV issues, Department of Motor Vehicle, and your driving license, that they want to say that you are basically an administrative citizen. You don't have rights to access the courts. It's a privilege and not a right. And what they want to do is make all of our quote-unquote entitlements or rights by law into privileges, and that you only get them when the president or whomever says that you've been acting okay and you deserve to get your privileges.
So are you saying that they're overriding the current court system with what they're doing?
Oh, they're blocking it. They're putting up fortifications. They're using a program of preemption. And if you read, like, Naomi Klein's book, The Shock Doctrine, it gets into how this was played out in Chile and in the southern cone of South America, Latin America. In Chile and Argentina and Paraguay and Uruguay and even Peru. And, you know, it really goes all the way up through into Central America as well, Honduras, Guatemala, I mean, even Colombia. There was no Panama. We annexed the country from, you know, Colombia. So we've been playing this game for a very long time, but what's been going on is that the very same program like Condor and others that have been run overseas by people like Negroponte, Kissinger, and others, you know, you can go into Wolfowitz and Wolfenson and, you know, Dan Quayle and Bush One and more, they're carrying on here at home. You know, we used to have about 35% union membership in, you know, employees and laborers in the United States, and that includes state and federal employees and others and private sector, and it's down to, by many estimates, to 7% or below. And that has not been by attrition, by people just falling off and saying, I don't want to be a union member anymore. It's by aggressive attacks against any form of, you know, not only collective bargaining, but contractual rights of employees, actually going in and taking over, to a large extent, carrying on hostile takeovers of labor unions, and then having the labor union controlled by the employers.
Eric, you mentioned Operation Condor, and I'm familiar with that, but I think maybe it'd be great if you could maybe describe that a little bit better for our listeners. And it is fascinating that some of those same techniques would be coming back home to haunt us. But could you describe what that was?
It's not, they're not, it's not like flashback, kind of like the CIA, like, you know, we're blowback, excuse the term, to where we're doing something overseas, and then we feel repercussions where people from the country we're carrying things on come back over here and try to retaliate. This is our own people within our own country carrying it on upon our own people. This is not people from Central and South America who are coming here to get even and settle the score for all the stuff that we've done down there in those countries. It's these very same people who have been running them out of the country, carrying it on upon our own people here, and aggressively so. I mean, to the point of one example, and what Condor is literally going after union activists, teachers, you know, professors, nuns, priests, anyone who adds value to the, I guess, the social structure or the social, you know, contract between capital and labor, or management and labor, and who want to live in a quote-unquote civilized society, and who feel, you know, things that, like, pollution laws or anything like that are important. And those who don't, you know, basically government was set up more to go after corporations and, you know, keep the playing field level to some degree, and keep the corporations and industry honest. A lot of the things that were set up, like, say, arbitration, that was supposed to be a cost-effective mechanism or tool that was to ensure due process and force the cost of it and make it timely, force the cost of it upon industry and the employers, that's now all been turned into a weapon to literally, I mean, they're forcing people to sign pre-employment arbitration agreements. Staples is actually carrying on psych exams on the computer in their back room of people under 18 and over 18 that have no idea what they're, you know, sitting down and being tested upon, and that they're breaking their constitution, or, you know, they're being, I guess, coerced or convinced that they have to break their constitutional rights and testify against themselves just to get a job. And what went on in with Condor is literally to where they had programs of assassination. And there's many ways you can go after and assassinate people. You can do it through character assassination. You can do it through, you know, like one of the tools that they like to use is, say you're a union member, they use other union members to go after you. And the union members like it because they usually get your job or get benefits and stuff that are taken from you. And the employers love it because they take out any kind of an organizer or a leader or anyone else that might actually, you know, bring the efforts together to have a decent working wage and also working conditions, you know, safe conditions. You can see, like, what happened with Murray, the guy, I think he was in Virginia or West Virginia, with the mines. He was, you know, it came out in a bunch of the stuff from when the mines collapsed that he was actually taking a bunch of the IMSHA inspectors who work in and alongside the miners, and they're safety experts. They're part of the industry. He was getting them moved out of his mines because a lot of these guys were actually doing their job. And so a lot of the activities that have been carried on overseas to benefit large employers and large industries like mining, timber, you know, manufacturing, et cetera, the very same programs that have been very successful overseas that are feeling strong repercussions throughout not only South America but many other regions, now they're using the very same programs and have been for some time here in the United States to the point of not just character assassination, but literally taking people out through, you know, planned accidents. We had two guys on in the United States Merchant Marine. We had the Coast Guard come out to do inspections under what was part of the Bureau of Marine Inspection. And the chief engineer, this guy, Philip Pellicito, and the second assistant engineer, his name escapes me at the moment, they were on board their vessel. And the chief and captain are the ones who are supposed to control any kind of inspections on the fire suppression systems. And, you know, we're talking about a large vessel, you know, many merchant vessels are anywhere from 6, 7, 800, 900, or 900 feet long, you know, like large ULCC, ultra-large crude carriers, and VLCCs, very large crude carriers like the Exxon Valdez. But these two guys were killed. They were asphyxiated. And guess what? The Coast Guard and ABS were on board when it happened, and guess who gets to investigate themselves? The Coast Guard. And these guys were known for being union activists, and I believe that they were taken out.
Well, so you're saying that the reason why you're looking at all this sort of thing, it was pretty much started with the what they were trying to do to you, and you started looking at a bigger picture?
No, I mean, but when I came out of school, I went to Kings Point. It's a federal maritime academy. There's state maritime academies. It's a sister academy to West Point in Annapolis. Was the industry was caught, you know, especially my federal, they call it a union, but it's really not. It's a federal officers association. It's kind of like a police officers association. And it's beyond that. It's a federal contractor itself. It's also a federal employer, just like the shipping companies. And it goes even beyond that. It's a general agency. It signs general agency agreements with the United States. It becomes an arm or extension of the United States, just like the shipping companies. So we're in a very peculiar and very specific industry that goes towards not just civil defense, you know, something like Katrina happens, but also national security. In a time of war, a national emergency, you know, my naval commission can be activated, and then, you know, if we have to, commandeer the vessel, get it to safe harbor, or, you know, take over operations of it through the Department of Navy and get the cargo to where it needs to go, or, you know, start taking instructions or directions from directly from the Department of Navy and act as the liaison on board. Obviously, if I'm an engineer and I'm the only naval officer on board, I'm not going to take away the, you know, command and control of the vessel from the captain, but I would act as the liaison to the captain for the Department of Navy. And any orders and stuff would go through me to the captain. And this entire system is being taken down, destroyed from within. And even so we can report, if we can't complain about, and we're supposed to have a very specific system of grievance and arbitration, if we can't complain about simple things like feeding programs, overtime, pay, vacation or anything else that keeps us on station, how can we complain about larger issues of graft, corruption, collusion, shoulder-launched missiles being smuggled in a container, live sex slaves coming in a container? This kind of stuff happens more than people care to imagine. Small arms being smuggled in a container, especially if the captain or any personnel on board happen to be involved in it.
And I have heard that that is definitely more prevalent than you would think. So what type of what it sounds like is that the normal chain of court system isn't working anymore. And
well, it's not just for us, because we're mm-hmm. supposed to have we work on things called shipping articles. They date mm-hmm. back. They're enacted in 1791. They're articles of agreement with the United States. When I work on board these ships, I work under the American flag, and I work for the United States. I don't work for the shipping company. They've set up the federal contracting program to where our pay, our medical benefits, legal aid, and more is paid out just like for, say, the soldiers. Say Halliburton and KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, were contracted to provide to the military uniforms and food and water and housing and, you know, everything and, you know, basically they needed, included fuel and vehicles, et cetera. And, you know, the federal government finally said, hey, you guys are so honest and decent. You're doing a really bang-up job in Iraq, no pun intended, with, you know, contracting and providing services as rendered and as, you know, requested and paid for. We're going to go ahead and allow you to carry on the system known as the Uniform Code of Military Justice, so that if anybody has any grievances about pay or water or food or anything else, we'll have them go through you, because we know you're honest and decent, that, you know, you'll go ahead and hear their grievances and take care of it. And that's what's going on in the Merchant Marine, to where our entire system has been handed over to these federal contractors who are paid in trust with our pay, our legal aid, our medical benefits, and more. This goes to the issues of privatization. And instead of actually holding it in trust and then providing it to us as they're supposed to, as general agents of the United States, they instead do everything and anything to put the money in their own pocket and go as far as, like, giving us, instead of three meals a day, they give us two. And they take the cost of the extra meal and put it in their pocket. They give us substandard food. And then take the money and put it in their pocket. And they figure out all sorts of ways to chisel away at all the things that they're contracted to do and either provide them substandard, you know, get contracted at 100%. They're supposed to get paid 110%. That extra 10% is the commission or the portion off of the fixed cost, you know, that they're supposed to get for providing the service. And then rather than providing the 110% that they're getting paid, they provide 20% and take the 80% difference and put it in their pocket and figure out all sorts of ways that if anybody complains or speaks up, they use the system and the money not only that they're stealing, but the system that they're actually paid to provide to protect us against us. And if that doesn't work, then they use the Coast Guard as a risk manager for the shipping companies and the shipping industry. And they're not just doing it for here in the United States and for American flag. Because people have to understand that a lot of these foreign flag vessels are American-owned through shell companies. Just like, you know, you think the Cayman Islands is a flag of convenience, you know, a mail drop for a lot of these corporations. A lot of these shipping companies are. The American President Lines, which is a U.S. corporation paid for by the U.S. taxpayers, just like U.S. Lines, it was a bridge, a land bridge made out of ships, protecting our international rights of way and trade routes to other countries that we all paid for, that was then privatized, formed into a private corporation, and then that private corporation was sold overseas to Neptune Orient Lines, which is a Singaporean corporation owned majority stake by the Singaporean government. But when you start digging deeper, you realize that, well, American President Lines, that used to name all of its vessels after American presidents, of course, that's how it got its name, they assimilated and incorporated Hamburg America Lines, which is one of the three companies or corporations that was shut down during World War II of the Bush dynasty for, quote-unquote, trading with the enemy. and you start to see that the icon that they have on their flagships, which is the flying eagle or whatever, it's the ancient Egyptian, I think it's an eagle. You can see it on, if you go online, you can pull up American President Lines and you'll see it on their websites and stuff. It's the same insignia that the Gestapo and the SS used to use in World War II. And you start putting pieces of the puzzle together now that this U.S. corporation, this U.S. Treasury asset, has been sold first and foremost, privatized here in the United States, moved overseas. It's like taking the San Francisco Bay Bridge, privatizing it, selling it to some corporation, and then uprooting the whole thing and moving it overseas. And that's what's going on with our merchant marine now, to where 97% of all our cargo is carried on foreign flag, coming into and leaving the United States. 95% of this is uninspected, and President Bush wanted to turn over port security to Hutchinson Whampoa, which is a Chinese corporation that's owned majority stake by the guy who was second in command for the People's Liberation Army, the radical right wing of the Chinese military, the radical right wing of the Chinese government, which is the Chinese military.
Eric, it sounds like you have lots of specific examples of things that are happening in your part of the world that have to do with the New World Order, the loss of sovereignty of the United States of America. How would you describe this as in the global context? Do you see this as part of the larger plan?
Well, think of the two vessels that are coming out now, these international class interceptors that I talked about that are having all kinds of contracting problems and everything else. And, you know, I don't know if it's people seeing the name and what's going on, and they don't want these things on. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But they're named the Berthof and the Vosch, and you start to look at, like, T-Mobile, which is a German corporation. It's a cell phone carrier here in the United States, and they started to do a lot more in information services. It's a German corporation owned and controlled majority stake by the German government. And you start looking at all these things, and you go, you know, like, look what happened with Chrysler and Daimler-Benz. And you look at all these little fingerlings, and even back to World War II and Zeppelin and Goodyear and more, and you realize that, you know, President Bush himself, his family, they're related to Queen Elizabeth, and Queen Elizabeth is related to the Habsburgs. And this is all coming out of Austria, Bavaria, Germany, through England as a thoroughfare, and literally World War One and World War Two were giant psyops, and they fooled us all. We think we won the war when we appear to have won the battle, but the war is far from over.
Okay, so you think it's tenable to say that the Fourth Reich is here?
Oh yeah, I had that on my website for the longest period of time. Think about the fact that we have military tribunals going on here in the United States. That in Reed versus Cover, which is a U.S. Supreme Court case, the Justice Hugo Black, I thought he was Chief Justice. I don't know why. I've said that before in other programs. He was actually an Associate Justice, and I think he became a Justice, but he wasn't the Chief Justice at the time. But he's put out a ton of really good decisions. His name's Hugo Black, and he's worthwhile read on a lot of these decisions. But if you pull up Reed, R-E-I-D versus Covert, C-O-V-E-R-T, not the case from 1956, but the one from 1957, it goes into specifically why the military is not supposed to adjudicate. And they even cite in there that, you know, adjudicate civilian affairs, but they cite in there specifically that this is the first time since the Constitution and Declaration of Independence that the military has ever tried to gain control of and seize control of, not just to police civilian affairs, because we had the Civil War, where the North tried to impose the military upon the South under Reconstruction, and the Posse Comitatus was enacted to prohibit the military, which is intended for quote-unquote defense of all the citizens, not just a select group, and it's only supposed to be used for specific purposes, period, for defense. Was not to be used for quote-unquote police action. But they've gone beyond that. They're not just carrying on police action. They're adjudicating civilian affairs. Do you understand how unconstitutional that is? And the Bush administration has ripped to shreds every ounce of not only statutory, but even, you know, the amendments. And people are thinking that he's going to walk away at the end of the year with the elections. I mean, look at the dunderheads that we have running for president right now, both Democrats and Republicans. I think the majority of people out there in the United States are appalled at the quality of the candidates. I mean, I heard something from Fred Thompson on the radio today where he was just like bumbling, like, you know, mumbling all over himself on some kind of an answer that he was asked. And, you know, we've got an actor like Fred Thompson. We've got Giuliani, who's, you know, a clear, in my mind, a fascist. Anybody in New York who would talk about him, like the police or fire department or anybody else, they hate the guy because of what happened from 9/11. You know, and you start looking at even with Hillary, you know, at some point, do we really want to live in a system of royalism or feudalism to where these titles or positions of power and authority are passed from one family member to another?
I heard somewhere that was like 36 years that would be between the Bushes and Clintons in office.
Yeah, we might as well just hand it back over to the Queen. You know, and if you look at all this stuff, too, Ronald Reagan was knighted by the Queen. Well, so was George Herbert Walker Bush, knighted by the Queen of England. And it's a hereditary title, so our current president is a knight. He is, you know, when they say New World Order, they're talking about an order of knights. And they've used these orders of knights in India. They've used them in Malta. They've used them throughout the world to subjugate the people of a former commonwealth or, you know, a colony and bring them back under control. And all of this is about recreating the, quote-unquote, United Kingdom and subjugating all countries in the world to one rule. And this is something that's been in plan for a very long time. And this isn't something that the Bush family thought of. You know, this has been in the works for thousands of years. And they, you know, they go in, like, if you really think that the library in Alexandria was burned, guess again. These guys went in, did a false flag operation, made it look like it was burned, and stole all the, you know, the valuable books. And what they've done is they've sequestered all the information and knowledge and great works throughout history. They've sat in, you know, basically in a seat of, I guess, in their own minds, divine right. And, you know, even what I was talking about, like the Germans, Austrian, Bavarian, you know, the republics that were merged under Hitler and even Bismarck, we now have, and I was born and raised Roman Catholic, we now have a German pope. And when you look at all this stuff coming to together at the same time, it's not just weird, it's just it's unbelievably uncanny. It's just you could not write this in a novel and get away with it.
You know, some of the things that you've said that you went quickly, if I could ask you to go back over some of those things, a couple things that intrigue me. You talk about the long-term goal being to recreate the United Kingdom and establishing one rule over the world. That would be the New World Order. But you also talked about World War I and World War II as being psyops. And I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that the Bush family was heavily involved in arming Hitler during the 20s and 30s.
And so was Disney, and that's what I was saying. Hamburg America Lines and Union Banking Corp, those were two of the three companies that were shut down, that the Bush dynasty owned, that were shut down by Roosevelt for trading with the enemy. But when
right.
you start to look at what Roosevelt did, too, he wasn't that much different. I mean, he took a different, you know, I guess, approach to it all. But we had a depression. The thing was all planned and rigged, just like they're doing now with the, you know, home mortgage scandals and all the other stuff that's going on. They did this intentionally. And if you look at even the History Channel has some of these interviews up with people from that time period saying, look, don't let them take our industry away. Don't let them take our jobs. And it's, I mean, you could take those people and bring them forward to today and it'd be the same thing. It looks and feels a little bit different. But then you had other people, too, that were interviewed, and they were asked why they joined the military, and they said to have three hots and a cot, basically to survive. And, you know, we're to that point now where they're putting all the pieces in place, and the only thing that's going to stop it is the people, not just of America, but the world, because these guys are marching us towards World War.
Just okay.
Like, I mean, we are now in the place that Germany was in World War II. We're a pariah state. A lot of countries around the world disdain. I mean, we used to be the most loved country in the world, and now we've flipped, and we're in the same position that Germany was in. They're shelling us out. They're moving all the technology and resources to China, just like they did from Germany to here. And at some point, they don't care if they use communism or capitalism or socialism or national socialism or whatever other kind of doctrine. You know, and even you can look at some of the stuff like I was saying about Naomi Klein's book and the shock doctrine, disaster capitalism, to bring us down so that they can get people to the point where they are so angry, so fed up, that when they throw us into a position of world war, they're just going to be basically putting uniforms in people's hands with a gun and saying, go.
Okay. Going back to this comment of yours that World War One and World War Two were a psyop, the confusion for me is that, okay, you apparently have a perpetual conflict between England and Germany, and yet it would seem that this, if we have the Fourth Reich
so
here...
It would seem, because
yes.
Even, remember I said Queen Elizabeth was, she's related to the Habsburgs of Austria, Bavaria, and Germany.
But you're saying this perpetual conflict is more or less a staged conflict.
Well, look at like what happened to Paul Warburg, you know, Brown Brothers Harriman, Warburg, Kunin Loeb, Goldman Sachs, all these, you know, just like Carlyle nowadays, all these international holding groups or financiers that made profit off of buying military industrial complex assets, just like Carlyle is doing, and adding value to them through wars and rumors of war. Paul Warburg's building in, Dresden. In Dresden, I believe it was in Dresden, they carpet bombed everything. There was nothing left standing, period. I mean, we destroyed it, and we didn't even have to with all the everything that was going on. The only building left standing was his. And you could say it's a rumor and it's not, you know, whatever. But when you hear some of these things, you know, those kind of stories, a lot of, you know, stuff that comes from folklore, whether it's the city of Troy or whatever, is based in some truth, and whether that's just a truth of his own, you know, feelings of power that he can do things and stand unscathed, these people aren't affected by what they're doing, or at least they don't feel that they are. They seem to think that they stand in some kind of a cocoon to where they can carry on all these things and be, like, you know, look at Rothschild. The Rothschild clan's been around for, you know, hundreds of years, and they sit in a position now, and they've been involved in a lot of this themselves, to where they are setting the price of gold for the world twice a day. How does one family get that kind of control and authority and power? Many people talk about the five families that rule the world. Supposedly it's his heir apparent, his five sons. And then you look at that, and then you compare it to us. We're the ones who are going to do the fighting. We're the ones who are being insured by these people just as if we are slaves. And then when we lose our lives in senseless wars, they collect the insurance off of the death benefits of our own soldiers. You know, they love anarchy. They love chaos. They love war. That's why they sell it and are doing everything to sell this one to us. And it's also about subjugation and control. They want to put us in a position where any dissidents, any truth tellers, any people who are coming out and speaking, you know, I don't want to say the gospel truth. I don't want to sound like I'm a Bible thumper or anything, but that at some point, that's, you know, because the Bible is literally about, you know, they want us to take it literal. But the Bible is it's a warning. It's just like Plato's Allegory of the Cave and the Republic. It, you know, the Republic was written 2,500 years ago. And it tells us how they play this game. They build up republics, they build up commonwealths, they build up the public trust, and then they come in and steal it all and crash it.
And over again.
Yeah, exactly. And they've never failed on any republic, ever. They've tried pulling it a couple times here, but we've also, you know, Roosevelt declared bankruptcy in 1933. He also put out executive orders to seize four precious metals that included gold, silver, steel. Think about that. And, you know, I think it was Taft who also, Taft and Harding, I think actually a couple of different presidents, who tried to grab control of the steel mines and use, like, you know, wars or threats of war to impose the military upon, you know, employees and workers in the private sector or in a regulated sector, just like President Bush is using the Coast Guard to come in and seize control of not just the United States Merchant Marine, where many of these people are literally civilians. They're not in the same, you know, quote-unquote boat as I am, you know, or position. They don't come out of King's Point. They come out of either a state maritime academy or come up the hawse pipe, so to speak, which means, you know, basically coming up the hard way. But also over foreign nations, merchant marines as well. So you have a military now. They've literally declared that the seven seas and all oceans, lakes, rivers, you know, tributaries, anything on the water is now a military base, and anyone and everyone who comes on that military base is under the jurisdiction and authority of this new and quote-unquote special branch of the military, a.k.a. the U.S. Coast Guard.
Then how does the U.N. play in that if they're doing the Law of the Sea Treaty?
Well, that's part of it, because that also, because if you think about, like, the stories of Atlantis, right, the sunken continent, it didn't sink at one point in time. It's always been sunken. It's the continent. It's the landmass that's under the water. And these guys operate from that point of view using admiralty and general maritime law, which is, you know, in our own situation and throughout the world, in our own situation, it's constitutional. It's on bar. Like, I work on shipping articles that they're not incorporated in the Bill of Rights. They're actually in the Constitution. Because shipping articles are valid articles of agreement with the United States, akin to what a U.S. ambassador works on. And the reason for that is because an American flag vessel is under American flag. It's considered sovereign soil. When it goes overseas, it's literally a floating U.S. embassy. And you can see that all of our, quote-unquote, U.S. embassies that used to go overseas into foreign ports have now been, you know, taken over, taken down, moved outside of the country. We don't have our own federal officers on board. And our only choice is, since we don't have the cargo under our control on our ships that are built in our country, regulated here, taxed and the fees and everything else going here, and the crews and everything trained here, our only recourse is to turn the Coast Guard into a branch of military, which is crazy. We bring the ships back in our cruise ship industry. It's 95, if not 98% foreign flag now.
And so,
when you think about all the stuff that's going on, like with people like Natalie Holloway and all these others, whatever happens on that vessel, it goes to the flag of the country of the vessel. So if it's a Panamanian flag vessel or Liberian flag vessel, guess where your rights are?
But if they're owned by us under weren't you saying that they would be owned, but under another?
No, it goes into the whole shell company and moving stuff out of the country. They do this as a, it's called a flag of convenience. And it goes to labor laws on board for the personnel on board. It goes towards regulation. It goes towards pollution. It goes towards if there's a rape or a burglary or anything else that happens on board, you're not protected in the United States. That's why, like I brought up the case of Reed versus Covert, it's called extraterritorial jurisdiction. And that's a big question, not only at sea, but like when we have American citizens overseas. And it's one reason why our troops used to have and still do have the American flag on their uniforms, because they're basically U.S. property. And when anything happens to them, it's just like as if somebody attacked one of our ships or one of our planes or anything else, and we're supposed to step to the plate and take care of our people. And instead, you know, one of the things with the POWs, like in Korea and even Vietnam, one of the reasons they didn't go in and do anything, even Perot and others have, you know, tried, was because of the enormous cost that would have had to been paid to these people for being prisoners of war for so long, and to actually make them whole, which is what the government's supposed to do. And even things like, and you start looking at this and really looking deeply into it, and you see how really corrupt things have become, is that they're actually insuring our federal officers, federal personnel, military officers, military personnel, and insuring them for death benefits. And then you can see, like, the people being injured in Iraq, and if they go to Germany and they actually die in Germany rather than Iraq, they don't get the death benefits. But guess what? Somebody else does. they've got this whole program going on, and this went on with the 911 families and a bunch of others, and part of it was exposed in the Jack Abramoff scandal, and also when there was two women in L.A. who were insuring homeless, and you got to remember 50% of the homeless are, veterans. They were insuring the homeless, and I guess the homeless were figuring out a way to survive and weren't, you know, dying off quick enough for these two women who had insured them. And so they got caught by going out and killing them. And I guess they were actually collecting their Social Security benefits as well, and that was one of the ways that they got caught. And you got to, like I said, remember 50% of all those homeless people are veterans. And the Jack Abramoff scandal, they were doing the same thing with the Indian tribes, where he had the two tribes gaming against each other, and then the tribe that, you know, for gaming rights, and then the tribe that lost, he comes back to him and says, well, you know, we're really sorry, wish it had worked out better for you, but to tell you what we'll do, we'll set up life insurance for you guys and, you know, death benefits. And what he did was he set up in such a fashion so that when the Indians died, the death benefits would be paid out into Jack Abramoff's own private trust. And, I mean, it would have, you know, it would have behooved him to have started to supply them with liquor and guns.
Boy, you can really...
And the very same thing is going on with our soldiers right now, where they've got these SBN and SBD numbers that they put on the back of the discharges, and what they're doing is, you know, basically identifying ex-military as quote-unquote bedwetters or homosexuals or whatever, so that when they go out and try to get a job using their discharge to do so, they can't get work, and they end up on the street. And then somebody is, you know, these guys are all insured, and what they're doing is they're continuing the life insurance on these guys, and they're setting up the parameters to put them in an early grave so they can collect the death benefits.
And there's nobody policing the insurance companies on this, then?
No, and the insurance, it's so deep into Congress and the federal government, and right now there's Congress is, like, you know, coming apart at the seams. They've got the Department of Homeland Security Inspector General's offices that are being investigated now. The FBI is deeply involved. The levels of graft, corruption, and collusion and stuff that's going on in Iraq is just off the scale. I mean, this war has lasted longer than World War II.
So,
and even Smedley Butler came out and said war is a racket.
So ultimately, though, if it's like you were saying earlier, they'd be policing themselves anyways if they were investigating, am I right?
Well, they're putting people in positions of power and trust like... you know, Keenan Hamilton, if you look at those guys' resumes and the two that sat on the 911 commission, you know, they tried to put Kissinger in charge of the 911 commission.
Unbelievable.
And some of the other people that were knighted that I didn't mention, besides George Herbert Walker Bush Sr., Kissinger was knighted, Giuliani was knighted, and he's a potential future president, and he was knighted by the Queen of England, and also Colin Powell.
When they knight somebody, what does that mean anyways?
It's a honor of nobility, or a title of nobility given by the Queen, and it goes towards not only property rights that can be converted once you become a subject, but it goes towards, it's not the Nobel Peace Prize, it's for service to the Queen. And our founding fathers forbade that in both state and federal constitutions. And beyond that, even before the 14th Amendment came around for slavery, the initial 14th Amendment was supposed to have been, they were working on this at the time when all, you know, hell broke loose, was the, it's called the TONA, it's the Titles of Nobility Act, to make it, and it wasn't really needed because it's already in state and federal constitutions, to make it abundantly clear that no one can receive a title of nobility, period, from any foreign nation or here in the country. It is the law. And they've even had private associations that have tried to pull this, and they've gone after them and said, no, you can't do that. The only way that you can receive that is through an act of Congress. And there has been no act of Congress that I'm aware of that has allowed any of these individuals to accept knighthood.
Well,
and it's not, like I said, it's not a peace prize. It's actually a war prize. I mean, it's for carrying on war against the American people.
Okay.
Look at the lives and look at the careers of all those individuals that I just mentioned. Reagan, what was one of his first acts when he came in office? He fired an entire class of civil servant employees, the air traffic controllers. Did that make us more safe? No. Was that the right thing to do? No. What is the right thing to do? You bring in a federal mediator, have him look at the books, figure out what's going on, and you keep this entire class of highly trained professionals on the job. You maintain the status quo. You figure out the problem and you resolve it. You don't fire an entire class of civil servant workers. That's just, you know, that's a direct attack, not only upon those workers as a portion of the American people, but upon the American people and public transportation system.
What do you think he was trying to accomplish with that particular group?
Just shot across the bow to see if anybody was awake and, you know, if they're going to do anything about it. You know, and look what's happened. Since then, we had, you know, even back then, we probably still had about a 28% union membership. And I'm not any big, you know, union activist or anything. You know, the whole concept was created to supposedly, quote-unquote, level the playing field and give the corporate structure, or at least lend it to the employees to some extent, where they could have presidents and vice presidents and secretary treasurers and secretaries and management and, you know, whatever, to basically level the playing field. But what's happened is now the unions are working with, and this is in Naomi Klein's book as well, Shock Doctrine, you know, it gets to the point with disaster capitalism and extreme capitalism, fascism, corporatism, to where it's the large corporations, big government, the big labor bosses, and even the religions, the, you know, churches, organizations, associations, that all join collective forces together to injure all those that they're actually there to benefit or protect, citizens, consumers, union members, et cetera.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to start winding this down here to get if there's anything last thoughts you wanted to say. And you certainly have given us plenty of information here to think about. And I appreciate you being on this program.
Perhaps before we leave, Eric, could you just describe briefly your website so that people can go to it and find it and find what's on it?
Yeah, it doesn't have laid out real good what's been going on with me. I've been trying to get help with that with a webmaster, somebody that could help out. So if there's anybody out there, plus also getting the word out about, you know, not only what's going on with me, but a lot of other people out here. But it's www.martiallaw911.com, and it's martiallaw911.com. And the transcripts are also out there. If you type in Military Tribunals in America, it should come up on Indie Media or one of those places, and you can see where, you know, it talks about literally where they're saying I'm a civilian, and they have me before a military tribunal, JAG Corps.
And you also have a radio program, too.
Yeah, and I'm doing TV and stuff, too, on just like public access, trying to get it out and put it up on YouTube and Google on Time Warner or whatever out here on cable access in L.A., and then the radio station is on GCN. It's www.gcnlive.com, Genesis Communications Network. It's on Saturdays 1 to 3, and I get into a lot of different issues and take calls and everything. And
well, I appreciate
it. And I'm doing it all at my own expense with whatever I can muster and selling blood or whatever else, recycling cans or something to alive and on the run somehow and get information out to people.
Well, again, we really appreciate
you. Yeah, thank you very much for your efforts and for joining us tonight, and all best of luck for your struggles, which are on all of our behalf here.
Okay, and thank
you. Please start stepping to the plate. You guys are already doing it, but, you know, the listeners and everybody else out there need to become active, because if they don't, all is lost.
Well, again, I have to agree with you. So, okay, thank you very much,
Eric.
Good night.